Welcome to episode 30 of the F1 Philosophy Podcast. In today's episode, we'll dive into the high-speed action and strategic nuances of the recently concluded United States Grand Prix. We'll unravel the key moments, discuss standout performances, and explore the impact of Austin's circuit on the championship standings. Following our in-depth review, we'll shift gears to preview the upcoming Mexican Grand Prix. Join us as we analyze the track's unique challenges, evaluate team strategies, and share our predictions for who might dominate under the vibrant atmosphere of Mexico City. So buckle up, and let's accelerate into another thrilling episode of the F1 Philosophy Podcast. Now, onto the work at hand. A few formalities, if you will. You may find us on YouTube at F1 Philosophy, on Instagram at F1_philosophy, and finally, drop us a line at F1philosophypod@gmail.com to join our ever-entertaining fantasy league.
Thank you, Producer Gatsby. As always, great job. You're killing it these days. Normally, I have some silly quip and go off on some crazy tangent. But if everybody saw the race like I did, this was one of the best Grand Prix weekends in a long time. So we have a lot to talk about.
Yes.
So let's get right into it. I'm not even going to ask how your week was. I don't even care. That's how good the week, the race was.
Wow. That hurts.
Do you want, how was your week, Sean? We got time.
No. Let's just go.
Okay. Let's get into it right away. I have to eat some crow. So just give me a moment. 2 weeks ago, I released a solo rant saying I'm done with Ferrari forever. And one of the main points I had was that they don't act like winners, they waste golden opportunities, and they have a driver with no real future and no concentration, no ability to win. And what do they do the next race after that? All of the above. Not only did Charles Leclerc take the bull by the horns on the first lap chaos and go from fourth to first and then dominate the entire race, Ferrari sees an opportunity to undercut Max Verstappen with good strategy, a good strategy point, does it and succeeds. Like 2 weeks ago, they were nothing like this. So I got to eat it. Like, great call by you that Ferrari was going to do the sneak attack in the last episode, because that's exactly what happened. And now I got to eat it, sit on it, whatever crazy quip you're gonna say. I'll just say this: they better not get over their head, because they still haven't done it. There's still a lot of talk, like there was after Monaco, that oh, we're back, we're on the charge, we're gonna catch Red Bull, we're gonna catch McLaren. I think the sneak attack is the right play for Ferrari. It's the only way they can win. It's the only way Charles Leclerc can win, because when there's pressure on him, he loses. But anyways, your thoughts?
No, I think you're right. And I think I touched on it leading up to the weekend. Leading up to the weekend, that Ferrari looked confident. They seemed to be there. And ultimately, we're coming up to a run of tracks where they've been historically good. So I don't want to give them too much credit, but I think this is part of their plan, let's say. Whether or not they can deliver at the end of the season is a different story.
Yeah, that's a good point. They still have a long way to go. Right? And so you're saying that they planned it out that, okay, if we're going to make a push in terms of development, we'll do it right when, like right after the autumn break, essentially, is what you were thinking, or was there more to it?
No, I think they've got reasonable data on the car to suggest it's going to be good on certain types of tracks, certain characteristics. And this is a set of tracks where that's going to come to play.
I think we brought this up at the end of the last episode. Mexico is decent for them. And then after that, Brazil is anybody's game. So I don't see how they can feel that they're going to dominate. Because like Mercedes won 2022, Red Bull won 2023. So I don't see how Ferrari thinks that's the one course for them. But yeah, but maybe then after like Las Vegas, I think is what you're trying to say. There's like three of the six or four of the six that they could potentially take over. Or are you thinking maybe even all six?
I'm definitely not thinking all six. I'm thinking Austin, obviously,
mm-hmm.
Mexico, Brazil.
Oh, you are thinking Brazil.
Okay. I am thinking Brazil. Qatar, maybe, maybe not. Abu Dhabi, no. Las Vegas, no, I don't see it.
Wow, okay. I would think, because Leclerc did really good in Las Vegas, I would think they circled that one. Leclerc really wanted to win that first one.
It's one data point.
Okay, that's fair. We won't speculate too much on Las Vegas. Is it... What did I miss? I'm trying to ask here. Was I just too emotional with Ferrari that I called the bottom and too soon? Or I missed a growth? Like, did I miss something, or is it just dumb luck? Is it great development? I also want to ask you too, so answer both questions. What are you hearing? Did they actually bring upgrades, or did they not bring upgrades this weekend? I'm hearing two different conflicting statements.
I've heard something about them sneaking in an upgrade to a front wing that wasn't declared. There are rules around what they have to and what they don't have to declare. And if they did bring something in, I'm not sure it would have been that much of an improvement. Largely, the car was unchanged. So I don't think they were hiding anything that gave them that performance.
And I was going to say, I was going to make the quip, like, if they did bring upgrades, it probably would have fallen flat based off of recent history. So if the upgrades are coming next weekend, it might actually kill all the momentum unless they figured something out for Lewis, which is my thought. They're starting to bring that momentum knowing Lewis is coming. But I don't know. I would.
Yeah, I think you're jumping to conclusions there, but
mm-hmm.
I think that's really your big problem. You get so emotionally involved in this and a lot of other things that you're not looking at all the inputs.
I'm not seeing the big picture.
Yeah.
But that's what I'm here for.
Right.
It's either a great bottom call on Ferrari or they might just go back to normal.
I'm sure you've seen it floating around, the comparisons between Charles and Kimi and how he won his championship with Ferrari.
I have not. That's interesting.
Yeah, and it's one of these stupid memes where it just connects a whole bunch of dots that don't mean anything. Right? Comparing who is in second place, how many races left, how many points, you know. Connecting all those dots and then magically asserting that there's a chance he can, well, yeah, sure, but causation and correlation are two very different things.
Mm. And I will say this to that point. There was a cheating scandal that year, and out of nowhere, the team that had normally dominated the constructors lost it to Ferrari last second. Because of a cheating scandal. But there hasn't really been cheating.
That's,
yeah.
That's what I mean. The memes that make these comparisons have no substance to them, and they're not meant to have any substance to them. They're just trying to find any amount of hope that Ferrari and Charles can be there.
Sounds like my kind of meme.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And that's what every Ferrari fan needs at all times, is just a minimal amount of hope to keep them going. It's coming, Sean. Which is why I jumped off that train. The sprint was amazing too. Is that big fuck you from Carlos ever going to come? Because it almost came in that sprint when he took second, when he blocked, I guess he didn't really block off Charles, but he kept him at bay and they were fighting for quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Is that big fuck you going to come in the race, you think, at some point in time in the next five races?
I think this is the fuck you that you're going to get.
It's okay. Timid.
Well, it's not even timid. He's not going to go and you know, run Charles deliberately off the road, but holding him there and fighting for position is definitely ruining Charles's race.
Mm.
Right? Imagine the death threats he'd get if he's the reason that Charles loses the championship.
Oh, wow. Yeah. It kind of would be worth it, though. Sometimes you got to die for a good cause. It would be funny if after all that, yeah, this is like, you didn't really want me. You signed me. You didn't really want me in 2021. You brought me in as a number two driver. I eclipsed Charles at times. And then you kicked me out at the first easy chance you had. Fuck you. Anyways, speaking of the sprint, what a great sprint that was. I had thoughts on the sprint in the sense that there's probably still too many of them, but they should save them for courses like that. Austin is perfect for sprint races. There's a lot of corners that create great controversy. There's great straightaways. There's great chances to pass. You still have to be somewhat perfect in every corner. And it just made for an entirely great weekend. Mm-hmm. I feel like qualifying, sprint qualifying, sprint race, like everything. Like they had every single race and a qualifying session had everything you want. And my thought after it is there's probably still too many, but they should probably have one in each quarter of the season. And I would say Austin, get rid of Miami. China seemed to work. Brazil and Qatar. Or I'm missing one more. Austria. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So then Austria. Keep Austria. Get rid of Qatar. And that would just be my thoughts. Sorry, but yeah. What did you think of the sprint? What do you think?
No, I've always liked them. And I'll reiterate something we said earlier in the season, that I think they should be junior or reserve driver races.
Mm.
Find some way to force the main drivers out of that competition. Because you can look at it as, if you have a dominant team, it's giving them the opportunity to pull ahead more.
Mm-hmm, like we saw with Max, yeah.
And if you have teams that are, I don't even know what the right word would be for it, but basically shit disturber teams that don't have any business being there, but put extra effort into sprint races and try and destroy the teams out front kind of thing.
Like Kevin Magnussen and Haas, yeah.
Sure. That's potentially not great for the sport, but I think if you're putting young drivers or reserve drivers in there, it gives them the opportunity to show what they have.
Mm-hmm.
And then it also gives the main driver time to actually rest.
Mm.
Right? Because I think one of the big things we hear is that the sprint weekends are very hectic. You go from practice right into qualifying, into a race, into qualifying, into another race. They can do it, obviously. They're doing it.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a lot of work, and I think that short distance is probably better suited to somebody who needs to make a name for themselves.
It's mentally exhausting for the drivers because now you got to focus. It's like, you're right, it's an extra qualifying session, an extra race. It's mentally draining. And to your point, if you just line up the sprint weekends with F2 weekends, it's an easy transition. Instead of the F2 sprint race being for F2, make it for F1. That's what I would say.
Oh, I don't think they'd go for that, but it's one way to see it.
Somebody's got to fucking compromise.
Sure.
Anyways, the main talking point of the sprint was Lando blowing it in the last lap. And we just talked about his mental health situation. I reflected on it, and you're right. We're being a little hard on Lando and for a young kid who's still developing, still growing. So I won't shit on him. But I will say, it's moments like that that determine championships, right? Especially one so tight.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a shame to see him struggle like that again. Do you have any other thoughts on the sprint?
I thought Carlos did a great job at moving through the field. That was pretty impressive. Liam Lawson went nowhere.
Mm-hmm. In the sprint, yeah.
Yeah.
Oscar went through the field pretty nicely.
Yeah. It was a good race. There was action through it. It wasn't 20 laps of just sitting there watching them go around the course. So, yeah.
And with a title fight on the line, it made it even more interesting, I think. And kudos to Max for pulling that off. Because he didn't have the pace in 20 laps in the race, as we saw. One more thought I had from the sprint, and I texted you right away, was, holy shit, Yuki has balls sometimes.
He does.
And it's a shame that he couldn't hold it out for points. But Haas was on it this weekend. And we're going to talk more about that later. But, as I said, the next point I had was, and I'm firing them out here, people. Like, I really just want to talk about this race. I still think Max is going to win this title just based off of this weekend. He was everything he needed to be this entire weekend. And if Red Bull, it looks like Red Bull is now going to finish third by the way things are going, but he could still win the title and arguably had maybe even the fourth fastest car from Spa on. I gotta say, it's pretty impressive. But what everybody wants to talk about, and what I imagine you want to talk about too, is the penalties and non-penalties
mm-hmm.
between him and Norris. I will just say, because for the first time in a long time, I thought the FIA was actually consistent, as much as poor as that may seem. And I kind of agree with Jordan and Coulthard on this, that Russell got the penalty because he was behind going into the apex, and Max kept his position because he was ahead. Harsh calls either way. I think everybody knows my stance. I would have the FIA less involved no matter what. I will say Max did hold off Lando cleanly for 10 plus laps. So that has to go into the record before we talk about the penalty. Like, Max was superb in his defending. But I'll give you the floor. What are your thoughts on that situation?
I think the racing all weekend was phenomenal. It is a track that is, let's say, tricky to police, because it's a track that MotoGP visits, so we run into this issue of how do you protect the motorcycle riders while still making it so that the F1 drivers don't abuse it.
Mm-hmm.
And we end up with what we saw. Now, same issue at the Red Bull Ring, but the Red Bull Ring took the initiative to combat that by putting those micro gravel traps next to the curbs, which worked beautifully, and I hope that's a solution they put in more tracks.
Mm-hmm.
The penalties, so three come to mind, and I know there are more, but three come to mind right in the top. There's the Russell and Bottas.
Mm-hmm.
There's Piastri and Ocon, I believe, or Piastri and Gasly.
Piastri and Gasly in the sprint. That's when the penalty was.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You're right.
And then Norris and Verstappen. I know there were more, but I can't picture who they were. So Russell and Valtteri, it was tight, but he did push him off.
And he has a precedent. I think in this case, this is the Kevin Magnussen rule now. If there's precedent and there's past, they're going to give it when they see any type of it, right? Like,
and thank you for that. The precedent. There is precedent for not doing what they did. Not in Russell's case, but we'll get to that.
Okay, cool.
Then we'll talk about Piastri and Gasly.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing. He pushed wide while defending, pushed Gasly off the track. He deserved that penalty. And he didn't seem to argue. He kind of understood that's what happened. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What we saw with both of those incidents is two drivers fighting for position hard, but trying to take the racing line. What I saw from Max is two drivers fighting hard, and like you said, many laps of good wheel-to-wheel action, driving very cleanly. But then we saw exactly what happened in Austria.
Yes.
There was no way Max was making that corner. His car was pointed straight at the, straight at where he went. This was not a he pushed wide, he understeered, the car got loose. He was aiming directly where that car went. He drove Lando off the track, which is, yes, forcing him off the track. Now, the stewards were clear about this in their decision. You are not allowed to overtake on track. Or, sorry, overtake off track.
Mm-hmm.
And Lando did that. The correct way to recover from that situation, where both cars are still racing, is to back off, let Max get back in front, and then retake that position legally on track. That's why Norris got the penalty.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't argue that he needed a penalty for that.
I like your take on this. They're both wrong.
Yes.
Okay.
Now, what I mentioned about precedent is Max Verstappen, Lewis Hamilton, Brazil 21.
Ooh, yeah.
Another example of exactly what he did. Max uses this. I'm ahead. I know I can't defend after the apex. So let's not make the corner intentionally. It's a dirty move. He's using the rules to his advantage, yes. So I can't fault him too much, but it is a dirty move. And the fact that we've seen it now three times, to me, says the stewards need to penalize it. Right. Need to show that that is unacceptable because he is intentionally pushing drivers wide to exploit the rule that they can't pass on the outside.
I'm going to try and keep this not conspiratorially. I have a feeling the FIA is too scared of Horner to do something like that. That would be my original thought, that Horner would argue, hey, Max is using the rules. He's using the letter of the law. Does it really need a grid penalty? Like probably a grid penalty does make sense at this point. You're right for precedent. But I'm just trying to think like Horner because I kind of agree with you and I'm just trying to take another side on this. Horner would probably argue, hey, Lando had more time in the race. Why did he have to take the outside like he did, like in Austria and in COTA? They would probably argue it to a T, and I think the FIA is too chicken shit to go after Horner.
And this is where I think the rotating stewards can be good and bad. So the rotating stewards go against your idea because you may get a steward that just doesn't care what Horner has to say.
Mm.
Because they're not... I'm not sure if they're paid or not. I don't think they're paid positions. I think they're volunteer, if you will. So what does he care if Horner's pissed off? Okay, he'll get a little bit of flack in the press and some people might send him some nasty emails. So what? He did his job. On the other hand, if you've got the rotating stewards, then you may have somebody who is, let's say, more forgiving to that type of behavior. And then you don't get the consistency.
Hmm.
For me, I'm not even suggesting that there should be a grid drop for Max. It should have been handled in the race by giving both of them a 5-second penalty.
Hmm.
It shows that the FIA are doing their job. They're penalizing bad driving on both cases. And it does absolutely nothing to change the result of the race.
Yeah.
It can't. The 5 seconds cancel each other out, and they go back to racing. Which you can argue would be, well, that's not really a penalty then. But they both made mistakes.
Good point.
Let them continue to fight, but that tells them, no, you can't do that. And it sets the precedent for the next time something like that happens, that this can be applied. And if that kind of behavior is continued on and on and on, then you're talking about penalty points. Like we saw with Kevin Magnussen and the escalation of penalties, where people were saying, oh, you got a 10-second penalty for that. That's harsh. Mm. Well, yeah, it's harsh, but it's not harsh because it's Kevin Magnussen and he's a douchebag. Right? This should be the same thing now with Lando and Max as they go through this. If it happens again, well, it's 10-second penalties. Mm. If it happens after that, it's penalty points, and right?
And so on, so on, yeah. I think maybe to your point, because that's a good solution. They probably didn't do it because Piastri pulled close to both of them. So then they think, okay, maybe we're affecting the championship. if Max goes behind Piastri. Right? 5-second penalty.
Sure, but I don't think they... Why would they be concerned about that? Because they've already affected the championship. By giving one person the penalty, they've already dictated who comes out in front.
Yeah. I think in their minds, maybe because it was so minuscule, like Lando would have gained, what, 1 point? They went by the letter of the law?
Yeah, but frankly, if the stewards are thinking about championship positions and how it affects the championship, they're not doing their job. Well, their job is not to maintain the status quo or do as little as possible to affect it. That isn't their job.
But are they doing it?
That's a different question.
Yeah. And that's what I've always wondered. And you and I hashed that out a million times, so I won't give my stance, but I'll just say to everybody listening, give us your thoughts. Send us in some questions, send us in some comments. We'd love to hear them. And maybe there's a perspective we're missing. Because you and I have hashed that out a million times before. So, but that is a good point. It was probably, instead of blaming one or the other, we should blame both, but equally. Like you said, like they blame both, but they only gave Lando the penalty.
Mm-hmm.
How much of that do you fault it on McLaren, though? Should they have just ate it in that moment and told Lando to get the place back and pass him later? Or do you think they were too confident? Did they make another McLaren-like mistake?
I don't know if this is them trying to... How do I put this? Them trying to motivate Lando. But it was clear from every angle that we saw it that he was not in front at the apex. So telling him, we think you were in front at the apex, so keep the position, is just outright wrong. Mm-hmm. Their GPS data is the same as everybody else's. The camera angles show that at the apex, he was behind Max. So either they're blind, stupid, or they're trying to not sap whatever motivation Lando has in him to try and keep him pushing. Right? Because there's a possibility that he pushes, gets 5 seconds ahead of Max, and doesn't lose that spot.
Mm.
Right?
Came close. It was 4 seconds at the end of the race, yeah.
Right.
I would even ask, does this put a fire in Lando for the next race? And McLaren's thought is, let's lose this battle, but win the war. So Lando comes out even hungrier next race in Mexico. I wonder.
It could be. Ultimately, Lando's the one driving, so anything that happens on track is him. Right? The team's not making those decisions for him.
Oh, we definitely saw instances of that this entire season where they were relying on Lando to make the strategy call. So,
yeah.
Yeah. I wonder how much Lando gave up this weekend mentally. And I don't mean like in terms of mental health. I just mean I could hear him talking all weekend as if they were going to lose, that they weren't the best dominant team. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how much of a detriment that did to him.
Well, that's been your beef with him the last couple of years, hasn't it?
Yes. You can't just talk that way, especially in the middle of a title fight. You have to act confident, I would think. Right? Like in this moment, don't just go like, oh, it's not looking good for us. Because then stuff that plays out in the sprint will happen more often throughout the season. There's just a lot of comments I heard him say this weekend, like, oh, we're not really on it. There's something off with the car this weekend. Maybe this is not our weekend. We're not the favorites. Like, I don't know if you should talk that way.
It's irrelevant, really, because every driver has their own take on how to prep themselves mentally. And Lando appears to very much be the let's not get excited about anything. Even when it is good performance, even when we do see in practice and qualifying that they have a good car, he's happy about it, but he always tries to dial it back a bit.
Do you have anything else to say about McLaren, Ferrari, Red Bull before we move on? Anything that comes off the top of your head? We're actually being very efficient with our points and our time for once.
No, I can't think of anything right now, but...
Okay. Let's keep going down the list. There was a lot to talk about, but at the same time, I think you and I really hashed out the important points. So we'll move on because my next point is Lawson and Colapinto.
Mm-hmm.
That was exactly the weekend Liam Lawson needed, or I guess the race, because you're right. Then the sprint, he went fucking nowhere. But in terms of coming back from the 19th to 9th, and you know how little I give a shit about 9th places, it's just the fact that he charged through the field, I think, was pretty decent, pretty impressive performance. He was in 12th by like lap 10 for a V-carb. That's pretty impressive, especially because we expected Daniel to do that the last 2 years, and Lawson finally did it. I don't want to get in over my head because the first thought that comes to mind is he starts fast. We talked about this in the last episode. He likes to start fast and sort of taper off.
Yeah.
So it could be another case of that. So let's give it the next 5 races. But the Lawson to Red Bull train has already started and it's already left the station. So you and I might as well talk about it too.
Sure.
What do you think?
I think Checo's got a contract. It means nothing. I know, coming from Red Bull, they've proven time and time again that their loyalty is not with the drivers. So Sergio's got a contract to the end of the year, and I doubt they'll be able to force him out of that seat by the end of the year, or that they'll want to. I think putting Liam in that seat before the end of the year is just a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
And frankly, giving him 6 races and then throwing him into a Red Bull is a mistake as well.
Agreed. And we talked about it last, like the, one of the last comments you made in the last episode was this is just going to justify Liam overlooking Yuki anytime he does good. And that's exactly what's happened. And I completely agree with you. This is just big hype. It was a great race. It was exactly what he needed to do, but we need to slow down on this. But I asked you this off the microphone. How much of this do you think is V-carb sabotaging Yuki? Or is it just, was it a bad race from Yuki or in a really good race from Lawson? What does this mean for Yuki?
In the grand scheme of things, I don't think it means anything for Yuki because they might be talking about him more because people have started bringing it up, but he was never a real contender in Red Bull's eyes for that seat. It's unfortunate, but that's all the indications are there, right? His name has never come up in Red Bull's discussions, let's say. Their public commentary on it has never had Yuki going to Red Bull. Sure, you can put it together that they say, oh, we have 4 seats and we can move those drivers around. Yeah, but they're very much saying Danny could have made his way back to Red Bull. Liam is trying to make his way to Red Bull. No one is, I shouldn't say no one. They have said, of course, Yuki's a contender.
But that means nothing.
Right. They haven't come out and said, hey, look, Yuki's done really well. Of course we want him in the seat. No, the enthusiasm isn't there when they talk about Yuki. And my comment to you was that Yuki's a Honda token, right? So Honda wanted him there, so they put him in, and oh, look, Franz Tost didn't want to give up on him, and now we have a reasonable driver on our hands. And I think he's great, and it's probably worthwhile to say he's the best driver for V-carb at the moment. He's a consistent driver who's delivering results. So getting rid of him, moving him to Red Bull and putting Sergio in there leaves you with Liam and Sergio. An unproven rookie and a yo-yo.
Yeah.
So that might be detrimental to V-carb at this state. That doesn't mean that he shouldn't get to test in the Red Bull and he shouldn't get the opportunity to potentially sit in that seat next year if Red Bull gives Sergio the heave-ho.
especially if everything's wrapped up by Abu Dhabi, constructors wise, drivers title wise, why not put Yuki in the Red Bull for a race in a course he's pretty good at? He's done really good at Abu Dhabi a bunch of times.
You don't even have to do that. Put him in the Red Bull at the end of season test. They stick around in Abu Dhabi for 2 or 3 days, whatever it is. Sure, they do tire testing, they do rookie testing, but throw Yuki in the car for half a day.
Honda seems to be pushing exactly, well, before that, they want to test with Yuki. I still stand by the comment that they shouldn't have signed him as early as they did. It seemed to take a lot of the momentum out of him. It took some of the hunger out. He seemed like, okay, this is where I am. I'll just be happy with it. I'll just go with the flow. I think we need that feistiness back from early season and end of last season when he really took charge and had some great performances, like some 6th, 7th, 8th at the end of last season. Like, he single-handedly brought VCARB up the constructors.
Yeah, and I'll say we did see that from him in the sprint. Mm-hmm. He ended up dropping back quite a ways at the end of the sprint. But he was up there for a good while, and he was fighting like the Yuki I got so excited about earlier in the season.
Yes.
So it's still there, but that's potentially because now Liam's in.
Yeah. And like I just said, like, I wonder how much VCARB screwed him on strategy. Like, I don't know why they pit him as early as they did. When you're ahead of both Haases and you're fighting Haas in the standings, it's imperative that you get that strategy right, and they fucked it up big time. And they got lucky Liam pulled out a 9th.
Yeah, and I'm not sure if you heard it on your commentary, but he did come over the radio and ask, how the hell did that happen?
Yes.
Because he came out behind Lawson.
Mm-hmm.
And it shouldn't have happened. And their response was, we don't know, we're looking at it.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure you know, whether it was intentional or not, they gave Liam that extra place.
Exactly. And I was thinking in my head, it was almost accidentally a good thing that he started at the back on the hards.
Mm-hmm.
Because he could go one longer stint and then be faster towards the end.
Yeah.
Which definitely benefited him. Yeah, let's wait on Lawson. They've already anointed him. And I'm obviously go against the grain of the media. Let's wait on everybody right now. I gave my piece. Sergio should have been dropped for these last 6 races, but whatever. He's here. Let's keep him there. Let's keep everybody where they are. Let's not start speculating. And I bring that up because Franco Colapinto, 10th again. And now Alex Albon apparently has to worry about his job. That is absolute... Sorry, like, Sean and I came out for this kid right away. We came out on his side. We want to support this kid. I'm sure you have a different take on me than me. But holy shit. Like, no, Alex Albon should not be scared of his job. Just because a second Williams driver can finally pick up the slack when Alex is having a bad weekend, which he did.
Mm-hmm.
Full on bad weekend for him. Even hit Ocon out of nowhere. He George Russell'd himself. And it's good. It's important to note, I was thinking in my head, that all 2018 graduates had a below average weekend, or like a below expectation weekend. George fucked up qualifying. Lando messed up a few things. And Alex was just completely in the middle of nowhere.
Isn't Charles in there too?
Charles is a year before them, I think. Yeah. Yeah, he is. He finished 2017.
Yeah.
Anyway, sorry. Yeah. No. Colapinto basically has 2 10th places. And an 8th. It became an 8th after a last lap crash. Okay, good. You've got to be in it to win it. But his ceiling seems to be 10th on the course without DNFs in front of him. Can we relax, everybody?
But that is Williams' ceiling.
Albon, right? Albon has made a better ceiling. He's gotten 7ths, legitimate 7ths, legitimate 8ths.
Sure. But if you look at Williams as a whole over the last couple of years, I would say where they belong in the points is probably 10, 9, 10. Right? And that's based on Albon, because Sargeant wasn't it.
Sargeant was nowhere, like you pointed out in the last episode. He was an outlier, yeah.
Yeah, when you look at the last 4 races, Albon and Colapinto are, for all intents and purposes, the same. They've had 2 good races, 2 bad races apiece.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's impressive that Colapinto's out there doing that. But like we said previously, The only thing we can really draw from this is that we have another good driver who can match what Alex is doing, which is what you want in a team.
Yeah, but this is not suddenly a superstar in the making.
It could be. We don't know. We can't say one way or the other. That's my point.
Albon is still a step ahead in both of his good races, 7th and 9th. Mm-hmm. Or 8th in Monza. Sorry, 7th and 8th. So he still has more points than Colapinto. Yes, this is his first couple of races. But you can't just extrapolate world champion right away.
No, I'm not doing that.
I know you're not.
Other people are, and that's just ridiculous. I agree with you. All I'm trying to say is it's impressive that someone has come into F1 in a car that is not good and instantly matched a guy that's been there building that team for 4 years.
Yeah, you can put it that way, yeah, but I would also say the car is a lot better, too. We talked about this last week. It's the 5th fastest car by AWS metrics.
Mm-hmm.
So he's right around where he could be if he maximizes its potential. But let's relax. I just want to say let's relax. It's 2 tenth places. There's no sudden eighth. There's no, or I guess like an exceptional eighth, like not a last lap crash eighth. I'm kind of stammering right now, but I'm making a good point. There's no sixth place. There's no, like we said before we started, there's no podium finish.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the one thing I will say is he looks confident in the car. He can battle, and that's one thing we did see in the race, is that he was going toe-to-toe with the rest of the drivers who have been there for years and looked like he belonged, which is not what we saw from Sargeant, which is not what we saw from Zhou or Latifi, and we all know your opinions on those guys, so we don't have to go into that again. But we also didn't see that from Mick. We saw a couple of little battles with Vettel, which then bizarrely ended up with them crashing into each other. But we didn't see that type of aggression and, you know, wheel-to-wheel close racing from Mick.
Yeah, Verstappen at Silverstone. He charged through the field at Monza in the last 10 laps. Why am I defending him?
I'm not saying that he can't overtake. But when it comes to... Look at it like Sainz and Leclerc in the sprint. That type of battling we've started to see from Colapinto already, 4 races in.
Mick defended Lewis Hamilton for 15 laps at the Austria sprint. Why are we having this conversation? Anyway, sorry. The point I was trying to make about Colapinto, I actually wasn't saying he doesn't belong in that seat. What I'm saying is let's not anoint him. He's proven actually to be a decent choice.
Yes, and we're saying the same thing.
Okay. Yeah, I guess, Mick would have been the other option. And you don't think, okay, what you're saying is I don't think you would have seen what Colapinto has shown if Mick was there.
We don't know.
We don't know. Okay, that's a fair point to make. I was just trying to say 10th places don't make a champion, but it sounds like by the F1 media that he's a future champion.
Yeah, but just stop paying attention to the F1 media. We've beat them to death.
Fuck them. Yeah, actually, I got nothing else in terms of notes. I was just going to say, Alex, everyone's forgotten Alex's 2022 when he was basically equal to Latifi and De Vries. That year, all three drivers at the Williams, they all scored basically 2 points. Alex scored 4 because of a reclassification in Miami from that Mick and Vettel crash. So just to add fuel to the fire, Alex does still have a lot to prove because he basically built his reputation off of 10th place in Australia. But that doesn't mean Colapinto is better. A lot of people are saying Colapinto is better than Alex. I went a lot of places there, but yeah.
No, but those people don't have the data to support that. Because the data doesn't exist.
And it won't exist after 9 races.
You get a better idea after 9 races, but 4 races in where they've had good and bad races between them, they're the same.
Alex, slightly more points. But in terms of pace, I guess you're saying they're basically the same.
what I'm saying is statistically. So it's not like we've seen a fourth and an eighth. We're seeing, I forget what it is, but it's 8-9 and 8-7.
7-8 and then Baku, and then 8-12. Alex got 8 and Colapinto got 12 in Italy.
Right.
11th and what was the other one?
At the end of the day, it's two low points finishes for both and two no points finishes.
Yes.
For both. And they're not far off from each other in their points and no points. So statistically, when you look at the variance, it washes out. They become one population. And that's why I'm saying all we can draw from four races together is that they are the same.
So let's get into Mexico. But we should probably bring up our Austin predictions just to see how bad we did, so we have better results this week. Mexico, you and I said preseason was nothing really to write home about. It's not exactly the best course in the world. It's solid. It's hard to pass. It's high downforce, right? Or
they bring downforce packages that are similar to Monza because of the elevation.
Mm.
Because it's so high, the air density is so low that you need more wing to generate a nominal amount of downforce.
Mm.
So it is a high-speed track. It's not one that you need a lot of downforce at, but because the air is so thin, you absolutely need large wings.
Interesting. That doesn't favor Red Bull then, at the moment, the way things are going.
No, it should be fine because there's not a whole lot of... It's not a bumpy track. I believe it's been resurfaced relatively recently. And it is relatively flowing. So as long as they have a stable aero platform, it should be okay.
We will see. I'd like to see Verstappen and Norris go toe-to-toe again this weekend. But let's go over Austin first. What did I say? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
Max, Charles, Norris, Russell, Hamilton.
Yeah, Lewis Hamilton really let me down. But I did get Norris, right?
No.
Norris, I said 4.
No, you said Norris 3.
Ooh. Okay. Too bad.
And who was 5th?
Actual 5th was Piastri. Norris was 4th, Max 3rd, and then 1, 2 Ferraris. Mm. Who did you say 1, 2, 3, 4, 5?
Max, Charles, Lewis, Oscar, and Carlos.
Mm.
So we are zeros across the board.
Zeros across the board. Who do we say for 10th?
You said Magnussen.
Close.
And I said Albon.
Not as close.
Who was 10th?
Colapinto.
Right.
Would have been finally time for us to make that prediction.
Right.
And the outlier, my outlier, let's just not even say it because it's not important.
Piastri and Perez outside of the points.
Why'd you say it? Why did you say it?
Mine was just as bad. Colapinto top 5.
Hmm. Yeah. It was both were, we shot for the moon there. But let's keep that in mind going into Mexico. So, you're saying big wings, decent downforce or nominal downforce packages, high speed.
Thin air does not do a lot of good for engines.
So Ferrari... might be the one.
If you want to make a lot of power, you need cold, dense air. Now, the temperature I don't think is going to be too much of an issue. Not that Mexico's cold or overly hot. It's going to be whatever. But the altitude definitely causes problems with generating power. So when you're at a deficit for air density, you have to try and compensate with fuel and timing and everything else. And that puts a lot more stress on engines.
Carlos did have that brief issue in Austin with his power unit, if you remember correctly. I wonder if it's a bug that affects Ferrari.
That could have just been a loose connector. Like, it didn't seem to do anything too serious.
Just trying to stir the pot, Sean.
Sure. I'd be looking more at teams that haven't taken new engine components. Ooh. Or are on the verge of finishing their allocation.
McLaren. Ooh-hoo-hoo.
Has Max taken penalties?
He did at Spa. But they also said he had an issue that we're going to fix in the pits, if you remember correctly, at one point.
Mm-hmm. So, all this is, I wouldn't even call it speculation. It could be irrelevant because they are allowed to do some refreshing, let's say. They're not allowed to open the engines. They're not allowed to do any real overhaul on an engine in between races. But I'm sure they'll make sure everything is up to speed and tight and everything's plugged in properly. It's just another layer of Mexico can throw curveballs when it comes to engine durability.
Meow.
Oh, shit. Cairo followed me here. What is it?
Get off the fence and make a prediction about who wins the title, Nicholas and Sean. I was neutered and I still have more balls than you.
Sean, this is very humbling for me because from time to time he will barge in when I'm taking a shower. So, yeah, I'm very humbled right now. I guess he really wants us to make a prediction. But as quickly as he came, he scurried off. So let's just do it.
Make your prediction.
I'll go Sainz 5. I'll start there. We're not going to predict the title just yet, Cairo.
Seems like a weak prediction, Nick.
55-5. I put Sainz a lot higher, and I got burnt. So I'm going to go tried and tested. Who you got for 5? And then 4.
I'm going to say Lewis in 5. Russell in 4.
All right. I'm going to do Lewis 4. This is tough. I'll go Max 3.
Okay. I'm going to put Oscar 3. And Max 2.
Ooh. This is tough. This is very tough. I'll go Oscar 2, Charles 1.
I'm going to put Charles to win.
Yeah. It pains me to do it, but it's because my outlier, and you can put this in now, is I think that engine bug we talked about does happen to Lando.
So Lando DNFs for engine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what about your 10?
I'll go Hulkenberg. They've been on it. I think they keep up their point streak.
Okay. I'm going Perez.
Yeah, it's not a bad prediction. And in your mind, Hulkenberg finishes 9th and Perez can't get around him.
Yes. For 69 laps, whatever the race distance is.
Yeah. There was a part of me that wanted to do Perez 2, Oscar 1. But I can't for the life of me put Perez anywhere near my top 5. Yeah. Home race, this would be the time, but no.
I mean, we saw it last year, turn 1. Right? Didn't even make it a single corner before he fucked himself out of the race.
Exactly.
And then I think it was the year before that when he ran into Yuki.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
So he's not been particularly good at home.
And it's one he wants more than anything. Funny enough, I think if he wins this race, he will retire. Which is a bold prediction, but...
Oh, didn't you hear his dad claim that he's going to be world champion?
Next year?
Who knows? The only thing I saw is his dad said he's going to be world champion.
Sure.
He also didn't specify in F1.
Would he do good in other sports? Would he do good in WEC? Would he do in good in like rally or the Dakar?
Brendan Hartley did amazing in Le Mans.
So it's possible for anybody, is what you're saying.
Poor F1 drivers make great endurance drivers.
Giovinazzi. Yeah.
Buemi.
Mm-hmm. De Vries.
Mm-hmm.
Who I still stand by, just needed more time.
And arguably for all these people that we've named, they've needed more time or better teams.
Mm. Or, yeah, different situations.
They're very clearly skilled racers, right? They couldn't make it in F1 for one of potentially many reasons.
Mm. Wrong place, wrong time, bad fit. Yeah.
Right. And Sergio's had his time. He's done well in subpar hardware, like we've said before.
Mm-hmm.
He just couldn't hack it at Red Bull. Which, even that is unfair, because he did before the cars changed on him.
Yeah. First half of 2023, he was right there. And yeah, whatever happened to the floor, that they just didn't listen to him, seems to really destroyed him, his confidence, and some of his abilities even.
Mm-hmm. But even 21, 22.
He was great.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah.
But now I think his time is done.
Unfortunately.
He's been there for a long time.
15 years almost, yeah.
So.
We talked about it early on in the season. If Sauber left their seat open with he who must not be named, not being signed so early, Perez makes perfect sense at that team. He's been there before. He knows the outlay. Like, he can help develop it, and he can overachieve at that team. Yeah, it's a different situation now, but still, I think he made complete sense there, and you nailed it. He should have wanted to leave Red Bull. He should not have wanted to resign when he did.
Right.
But yeah, too little, too late. Now everybody wants you gone, including me, and I defended you all the first half of the season. I said he was the perfect foil to Max. I don't believe that anymore. What's your outlier?
You took it.
Oh, sorry.
So I've been trying to think of a new one here, and it's not really coming to me.
Let's go with the flow. It's a team outlier.
No, I wanted it to be something else. Let's see, what other preposterous prediction can we make?
The cartel stops the race.
Don't be racist.
How's that racist?
Jingoist? I don't know.
Yeah.
It's something.
Stereotypical. There we go.
There we go.
Yeah, okay.
Yes. Well, let's just throw it out there. This is going to be a 2-in-1, but fuck you because you took mine. Colapinto or Yuki in top 5.
Yuki was really fast here last year. Yep. So was Danny. And Yuki needs a good performance.
Yes. Oh,
can I switch mine? You can take my outlier and I'll put Liam in top 5 just to spite you.
Nope. They're locked in.
We're locked in. Okay. Fair enough. Honorable mention to this episode, as I pointed out a few times, to Haas. I was going to give myself a pat on the back for bottom calling teams. And if that came out really weird, I imagine in your ears, bottom calling is an economics term and stock trading term. Like, you call the absolute lowest number on the stock. So I called the worst at Haas. I said, what the fuck are they doing? If you fire Steiner, it's nowhere but up. I was right. They are now consistent, and Hulkenberg now looks like a good signing. I'm not going to mention 2023, but they seem to have all the pieces in place to do a good job, and they're not going to get fifth, but it looks like they can hold sixth. in Komatsu's first year in charge.
Which is a good sign. I think they've changed their strategy and their mentality and how they do things, and it's proving that it's a winning strategy. Right? We've gone from one or two big upgrades a year and seeing the team drop back, so front-loading all their points, to being consistently there mm-hmm. in the midfield, which I think is the way they need to be able to move.
Yes. And it's going to be weird to see, because one thing Hulkenberg does have for him is he can slowly develop a car. And it's what Haas needed this year, which was just slow incremental upgrades. It's going to be weird to see how Alcon does, because I don't think Bierman's going to do any of the heavy lifting, and we know Alcon doesn't necessarily help the direction of the car. So it's going to have to be all Komatsu figuring it out next year. One thing Alcon does have going for him is that he can sneak a podium every now and then, mm-hmm. which is what they definitely need that. I might cheer for Haas next year. Not because of Alcon.
Yeah, I also don't agree with your he can sneak a podium comment, but...
He did at Renault. He didn't at Force India, but he did at Renault.
In which circumstances?
Before his race win.
Sure.
In the 2020 season, I think he had a couple. Nothing special. I think it was actually that race that Perez finished last to first. I think he was second, but he was in the Renault, if I'm not mistaken.
Would that not have been Monaco?
That would have been the Sakhir.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. The one where everybody was passing out.
Exactly. Oh, no, that was Qatar 2023. Oh,
okay.
Yeah. When Stroll and Sargent.
Okay. So in the older cars.
I'm completely wrong about that. He finished 11th at the 2020 Sakhir. Oh, wait. I was right the first time. I saw qualifying first, so we came from 11th to 2nd. Yeah, that was the one Perez won. Alcon 2nd. That was the podium sneak.
Right, but that's the one where Russell got the wrong tires and had to come back in and lost the race because of it.
Yes, allegedly. My brother and I are big fans of the conspiracy theory that they purposely pulled him in to not make Lewis look bad.
You and your brother need to get outside more.
No, we're very happy with the way we are in our lives.
I'm sure you are. It's never been the question.
Hey, just because we have different opinions doesn't mean we're crazy. Well, I mean, I'm crazy, but not my brother. Okay, don't loop him into this. Anyways, on that note, is there anything else you want to talk about before we wrap it up?
Let's see, anything about Mexico? I think we've covered most of what needs to be covered there. Anything that's come up in the news recently?
Just the Ferrari upgrade or no upgrade. And will it come this weekend in terms of engineering? And then there's silly season shit. Everybody's speculating about the last Sauber seat.
Sure.
Who cares?
Which apparently Sauber's come out and said it's not going to call a Pinto, period, end of story.
Oh, actually, that brings up another news point. Apparently, Colapinto's management team is teasing a Red Bull move.
Yeah, sure.
Interesting.
Again,
that makes sense to me if you compare him to Liam.
Sure. But then why have a junior team?
Yeah.
Why didn't you pick Colapinto for your junior team?
And what does that mean for Isaac Hadjar, who was way better than Colapinto in F2?
Right.
And to your point, early this season, you said this is the first year F2 cars are more like F1 cars. So if Isaac Hadjar was better, maybe stick with your stable. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So it's not to say that it isn't happening.
It would just be stupid.
It would be absolutely ridiculous. Anyway.
Yeah. We'll do a recap of silly season at the end of the year when content is at a minimum. because like our season, silly season conversations kind of just go one way, where you're like, hey, use your brain, and I'm like, hey, let's speculate everything.
Sure.
It's not always the best conversation with us.
Oh, which that just reminds me. Apparently now Bottas's move is as a reserve driver to Mercedes.
Yeah, what's with that now?
Which I feel like they've got 16 reserve drivers, so why the fuck do they need Bottas?
Yeah, it would be Mick, Stoffel Vandoorne, Esteban Gutierrez, and then Valtteri Bottas?
I believe so, because I think Anthony Davidson finally retired.
At the young age of 48, I think he is, or something?
If even.
Well, because he was around in like the late 90s.
Mm-hmm.
It's 24 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's probably, maybe he's just 45, but still. Yeah.
He's in his 40s, I know that. I just can't remember what it is.
A reserve driver who was never going to drive.
Right. But also look at Aston Martin and their, what's his name?
Drugovic.
No, the older guy. Pedro?
De La Rosa?
Yes.
Oh, no way.
Pedro De La Rosa is still kicking around the paddock.
Now, he is 48 years old.
If not older.
Yeah. Wow. He's got nothing else going on for him then, I guess.
Yeah, technically, I think he's a brand ambassador. And I did listen to a podcast he was on where he said he got behind the wheel of one of these downforce or...
The new
ground effect cars.
Ground effect, yeah.
For the first time, like a month or two ago. So he's not actively doing any racing in these cars, but he still is kicking around the paddock for them, yes.
He'll probably crush his bones. So, funny enough, I think he's only 4 years older than Alonso, if I'm not mistaken.
It could be. And he was definitely complaining that they are very physically intense cars.
So that puts out Jordan's theory that the old guys need to retire, or the young kids are not as challenged as the older drivers because the cars are a lot easier to drive.
Yeah, and we've talked about this before as well. They may be easier to drive from a, let's say, general drivability standpoint, but from a physicality standpoint, they're extremely difficult to drive because you're getting more downforce, you're getting more cornering speed, all that goes to your head.
Mm.
Right? So they have to have the shoulders to be able to steer the car under that load, but also the neck to be able to hold them, their head up straight, which is what we saw in Saudi with Behrman, that he was having to lean his head over because he physically couldn't do it anymore. Mm. And if you look at some of these guys, like Daniel Ricciardo is a good example of it. He looks perfectly proportionate from the front, but when you pay attention, his neck is wider than his head.
Yeah, I did notice that. Alonso, too.
Yeah, because it has to be.
Uh-huh. And on that note, all right, we'll be back after Mexico. We got this. We're midway through the triple header. And Brazil is the next sprint race, right? So this weekend they get to...
Do it all over again.
Do it all over again.
Oh, wait, no, sorry. This week's not Brazil.
Next weekend. But yeah, this weekend they get to just practice a little bit more, if that'll help anybody. Which may help Max, allegedly, or it might just destroy Red Bull like it always seems to. Like, the more practice doesn't seem to help them.
Right.
Anyways... F1_philosophy at Instagram, F1philosophy at YouTube, and F1philosophypod@gmail.com to join our soon-to-be-defunct fantasy league for the year. And then we'll be back for 2025.
All right.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.